Hey guys, this is Sam, and you're listening to the Facing the Sun podcast, the show that helps shine a light on building a better you. Hi guys, welcome back to Facing the Sun. Today I'm sitting down with Emily Bernath, a fellow published author and sexual assault survivor. This is a really powerful episode and one that I would recommend you listen to the full thing. We really dive into how to be an ally in these situations and how to really be an active listener and really acknowledge that this happens in our world and how this can shape people's lives. It's a really powerful episode. I really hope you guys enjoy it. Hi guys, welcome to another episode of Facing the Sun. I'm super excited for our guest today. Here with Emily. Emily, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Good.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. I'm super excited to dive into the episode today. Emily is a published author like myself, so we're probably going to geek out on publishing a book. But I kind of just want to hear a little bit more about Emily and your story and how you got where you are.
How I got to being an author. Well, let's just say it's not a life I dreamed of for myself. I grew up being the math nerd and got my bachelor's degree in chemistry originally. So that is my first love. My passion for writing actually came originally from a passion for women's ministry. I wanted to lead a small group. My story to kind of coming back to faith myself came from being a sexual assault survivor and really just wanting a community of women. And I didn't have that at that time in my life because I didn't invest in those kinds of friendships. I didn't see the need as much, I guess, until I needed it. And then I didn't have it. Right. When some women reached out to me and invited me to their small group and really just kind of took me in a place of a lot of darkness. It was really powerful. And I wanted to give back in some capacity to other women who were in maybe a similar spot to what I was in at that time. So that's where it started. Turned into a lot more than that, but.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, geez, I'd say so. I would love if you're comfortable to kind of unpack and talk about the aftermath and kind of psychological stuff that happens after sexual assault. I was assaulted myself when I was 15, so I am in that same group as you. But it's been very fascinating to see how that has shaped my relationship with like other women in my life, with men in my life, and with like my relationship with a higher power or like spirituality, so to speak. So how did you take that experience and kind of reshape it, so to speak?
Yeah. So for a while, I mean, my initial reaction when it happened, so I was almost 19, almost 20. So I was in college and far away from home, really. So if I hadn't had said anything about it, like it would have just stayed where we were, right? Like nobody would have known. It would have been hush, hush, all this stuff, right? And so I guess I don't know if ignorance is the right word. I was pretty ignorant. I just like expected people to believe me. And so I was like, well, this just has to happen. Like, how could they not? Right. Right. And so I was really open about it. I mean, I was pretty quiet growing up, but in my adult life, I've never been that quiet of a person. So I was like, of course. I told some of my friends at the time and straight up just got told it was my fault. So,
ooh. Okay.
Yeah. Talk about, the re-victimization, right? Like, the assault itself is painful enough. And you kind of, I at least went through this, like, my body isn't what it was anymore. Like no quote unquote good man, whatever the heck that means, is going to want me, right?
Don't even get me started.
Whatever that means, but that's what you tell yourself, right? Like I'm just used. I don't know. I think that was the hardest thing for me to overcome is to like redefine worth in myself and not allowing that man take my worth away from me. Cause our world is really great at spinning that narrative for some reason. I don't know why, but, it is. really that's a lot of what I do now. And I'll just say originally that on the night that it happened, I turned to God and was really angry, like, what the heck, why did you do this? And so it wasn't this like aha moment of like Jesus loves me and I'm just his creation and all those, you know, happy-go-lucky. It took me a few years to get to a place of where I truly like saw myself as valuable again. But in order to do that, you have to be willing to go to those dark places and confess the fact that it really wasn't your fault. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of sexual assault victims almost trick themselves into trying to think it was their fault, because somehow if we do, then I'm like in control of my healing, you know, like it was my fault. I can, you know, I have a say in how this heals. And it really just doesn't work like that. And the truth is, it wasn't your fault. And, you know, the healing isn't going to look probably the way you want it to look. Right. Being willing to really just admit that I had no control over this and I am hurt and I need help, right? Like I can't do this on my own. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that was one of the biggest things I had to do, is really just be vulnerable.
Isn't that the lesson of the century, right? And I also think there are so many women who are afraid, women and men, I mean, it happens on both sides, but are afraid to really speak out and say that this thing happened, because society has been so great at teaching us how to gaslight our own minds into thinking, well, maybe I was partially responsible for this, or maybe I did put myself in that situation. And especially growing up like religious, that can have add another layer to that feeling as well. And so I think that being able to have these conversations and be open about that this stuff actually does happen and it's going to be okay, really just being able to have this platform to be able to talk about that stuff is really powerful, because it can help, even if it helps one person come out and say something about their experience, I feel like that makes a difference. So thank you for being willing to talk about that with me. I know it's not the easiest thing in the whole world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me about how, so the book was inspired by this community of support, correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how's it done? Has it been received pretty well?
I think so. Yeah. I just finished the third book. I submitted it to my publisher last week. So
that's so exciting.
Thank you. Yeah. So I'm just kind of in the waiting game for that one, but excited for what's to come. But yeah, I don't know. I knew pretty early on that it was a 3-book series. And so, for the last 6 years, I've kind of just been finishing that out, and it's like, I don't know, the closest feeling I have ever had to being an empty nester. I don't have children. Now I've been working on this thing for so long, and I'm like, oh my God, what do I do with my time? And this, like, no, it's weird.
I get it. That's so exciting. And I will link it in the bio for this episode as well, so everyone can go purchase it and read it. I want to kind of circle back to something that you said while you were talking earlier about really being okay with being vulnerable. And what does that look like for you in a, not just in relation to sexual assault, but just in a generality of like wanting to improve and be better? What's the benefit of being vulnerable?
Well, I mean, kind of what I said earlier is that like, that's where the true healing comes in, is when you're willing to open up. Like you can't heal a closed wound, right? It has to be open. Even just in like a physical sense. Right. So, that is definitely one of the benefits, is that like, that is one of the keys to being able to heal. But I think too, like just in general, it's not, I don't know, there's people have such a stigma on being vulnerable, but really like when you come down to it, like no human being has the power to alter like my value or my worth. Right. And when I like actually believe that, like being vulnerable, I don't know if easier is the right word, but it's just like, this is who I am. This is what happened to me. Like, you know, like either take it or leave it. Right. Like I can't change what happened. I can't change how it made me feel. And so like, and you know, what benefit do you gain by not being vulnerable? I don't know.
I think sometimes it's a protection mechanism. I think that a lot of people are afraid to be their true authentic selves because they're probably afraid of rejection. But yeah. The thing that I've learned in my like journey and like getting older is if people reject me for my true authentic self, that's not who I want to be hanging out with anyway. Like that's not who I want to associate with regardless. And so you're right. Yeah. Being this true authentic version of myself, the people who want me are going to love me for who I am, not for what I can offer them or like what I give them. And so I think true power does come in vulnerability and authenticity. And I think a lot of people are kind of scared to gamble with that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's legal aspects of it too. Maybe you can't share certain details or whatever, but I think people misconstrue what being vulnerable is. Like, it doesn't mean I have to tell you every detail of my life. It's like, it's, you know, when I'm not okay, I can actually tell you that I'm not okay. And I don't have to feel like I have to cover it up. Right. And it's not, you know, I hate it when people are like, oh, how you doing? And they like expect me to say good. Most of the time I'm like, that's not my answer. Like it's, you know, if I'm like, oh, I'm pretty tired or I need some coffee or whatever. And then people just like get caught off guard. They're like, oh my God, she didn't say good. Like, what do I do?
I like, do not know how to answer this question.
Yeah.
Abort.
Right? I don't know. Yeah.
Maybe that's part of breaking the stigma too, though, is being able to respond when people are vulnerable instead of being like deer frozen in headlights, like, oh God, she didn't say that she's fine. I don't know where to go next with this conversation. Like, I think that active listening is such a lost art.
Oh, absolutely. And I think what you're touching on there too, just as like on this whole, like not being believed on being a survivor, right? It's like once someone believes me that this truly happens to me, then they have to start feeling accountable of like doing something. Right. And so like, if I just like, oh, that couldn't have happened, then it's like brushing it off and like, I don't know, freeing themselves of responsibility. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Like, yeah. Sometimes people don't, I think there's such a fine line between people being able to hear and validate emotions and then, but they also think they need to take them on and fix it. And this is the thing that I struggled with for a long time because I'm like a huge empath and I want to fix everything and I feel everything. But I've had to learn how to just say, I see you. I totally understand what you're feeling. I'm here for you if you need space, but it's not my responsibility to take this on. But 99% of the time, all people need is just someone to listen and validate.
Oh, absolutely.
That's it. We don't have to go around and try fixing everything. I can't fix your healing journey for you, just like you can't fix mine. But why do we feel the need to take responsibility for that, especially for people that we care about? I think that's where the lines probably get blurred the most, is feeling like I need to fix my partner's feelings or emotions or like my mom or my sister or something like that. Like, I feel like we just harbor so much responsibility in other people's emotions.
Yeah. And I think too, like, I don't know, on the receiving end, we think that we have to be able to give them an answer to fix something, but on the like giving end, the survivor doesn't expect you. Like, I didn't expect anybody to have the answers to heal me. I didn't even think it was possible, honestly. Like, I just thought my body was just like this permanently tainted, like I was never going to be the same that I was and that nobody could change that. Like, I didn't even expect it, right? Like, I just wanted them to see me in my hurt. That's it. Like, and be a safe place to talk. Right. And so, I don't know. I think we put way too much responsibility on ourselves on the receiving end when survivors are coming to us. Like, yes, if you do have the training or you know someone or, you know, whatever, like absolutely send them to the right places. But most of the time, like they just want someone to listen. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So what that leads me into my next question. If someone were to come to me or one of my listeners and express that this thing happened to them, do you have any like best practices or things that they can do to support them in that space? Or is it mostly just kind of active listening and holding space for them?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's first and foremost, they need to feel like they're believed, you know, and there are organizations and places out there that want to help people that nobody ever told me about. But like, you know, I do a lot of stuff with like the Utah Coalition Against Sexual Assault. We are talking Utah sisters here.
Yes.
Do a lot with them.
From Utah. So freaked out by that. So coincidental. But yeah. That's one I'm very familiar with as well.
Yeah. And every state has a coalition. You know, there's resources out there and places for people to go, that can give you professional help, that even just being aware that they exist and sending people there, it, you know, is more than what I got. So,
yeah.
That's powerful. I also think that awareness is a huge thing for people as well, survivors and people in their relationships and their friends. I mean, just being aware that this happens and that there needs to be kind of more of an awareness and plan for progression in that space, I think is very important. How was your spiritual journey affected by that experience?
So I had kind of turned away from church for when I went to college. Like, I don't know, it didn't really provide me much benefit to my life growing up. And so when I moved out on my own, I just was like, well, why do I need to keep doing this? I don't. But I did, like, I grew up in church and knew that, you know, God was real, so, you know, whoever he was. I didn't really know who he was, but, and so that's kind of why the night that it happened, I was like, I was really mad at God. But initially it just caused me to, I just drank a lot in college, like a lot of college freshmen and sophomores do. I did.
Right, of course.
And so I really, at first I just drank more, because I didn't want to end my life physically. Like, I knew, and I didn't want to give my abuser that much power either. Right. So I just kind of drank away my emotions because I didn't know any other way to deal with them. Mm-hmm. You know, I could tell that those people that had, you know, invested in my life and invited me back to church into small group again, that they saw a different Emily than I saw. Like, I just knew it. Then, you know, they didn't make any assumptions about what had happened to me. I opened up to them just like I did to anyone else. And they accepted me. They didn't treat me as less than, right. And so I was like, man, I don't know what they see, but if I can start to see myself however they do, like, I want that. And that's kind of what kept me. It was almost a like, all right, God, prove it. You know, show yourself. How do I love myself the way that they love me? Because I don't know how. Wow. So that's really where it started. I thought that writing my story in my books was going to be really easy, but that was a whole other spiritual journey with God. I was like, I've told this story, I don't know how many times, like from the day that it happened. Like, the story hasn't changed, so how hard can this be, right? And then it was another level of that vulnerability that we're talking about, right? Like, you know, when you're sharing just to a group of people, you know, or your friends, whatever, you can kind of judge the room, say, you know, you're not lying to them, but it's like, well, maybe I won't share this detail with this group and I will with that group. And when it's in a book, it's like everybody reads the same thing. So it's like, what are you sharing? What are they going to know? Right. Like, and releasing that control over who knows what was really hard. So,
yeah, because you also can't gauge their judgment either and their reaction, which is really hard too.
So, yeah, exactly.
Wow. I think there's definitely something to be said about finding, like, your quote tribe. Like, the people that truly see you and support you. I had a very very like intense spiritual awakening earlier this year and found like this tribe of women that saw me for who I was, not for who I was like projecting myself to be. And it really is true. I mean, whether you go to church or you're not religious or you believe in like a collective consciousness, the ability to see yourself through the eyes of someone who loves you is so powerful and such a powerful approach into really coming back and almost self-healing through your community, which I think anyone and everyone can benefit from. And I think that trying to do it by yourself is never really the answer, because perspective is a private experience and you need to be able to see yourself through the eyes of other people, because that's who you really are. I think the voice inside our head can be pretty rude when it comes to stuff like that sometimes.
Oh yeah. Still is.
Of course. Of course.
I just have better tools to like combat it than I did 10 years ago.
What tools do you have to combat it? Enlighten me.
You know, for me, the whole heart behind everything I do in my writing is that, you know, when you know the truth will set you free. So it's, you know, when you're hearing those messages about, you know, in your head, we all get them, right? Like, one of my favorite verses is John 10:10 that says, the enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy, but I have come to bring life. And so I use that as a yardstick in like everything in my life, is like, is what I'm hearing, or like, is, you know, are these messages stealing, killing, or destroying anything? Are they aiming to steal, kill, or destroy anything in my life? And if so, they're coming from a lie, like from the enemy. And how do I replace that message with the truth? What is the truth? And so the more that you get to know and understand like who God is, what the truth is, you can speak against those messages that you hear. That's what I do.
I think that's great advice. I think that's awesome advice. I think that people, even if they're not religious, can apply that same.
Yeah.
Is this a hurtful thought? Is this a harmful thought? Is this like, who told me that? I get that one a lot. People are like, well, if your mind is telling you that something is a certain way, you can turn around and ask your mind, well, who told you that? Where did you get that information from? Did you just make it up? And if you did, where is it coming from? So I really, really like that. Well, Emily, this has been beautiful and wonderful. I have one more question for you, something that I ask all my guests before I let them go. If you could give yourself a piece of advice to the version of you 5 years ago, what would it be and why?
I think, for me, 5 years ago, my first book hadn't been released yet. I was still like very much didn't know anything of what I was doing. I was just writing because I was like, I feel like this is the right thing to do. And in that stage, I was still very much trying to control like the impact of where my writing went and who heard it and why. But really, if you look back on it, like that makes absolutely no sense because I didn't ask to be a writer to begin with. So why am I trying to control like how it happens? So I think, the best advice 5 years ago I needed was just like, just let it be. you've already said yes to this journey. Like God wouldn't have asked you to do this if it wasn't going to end up good. So quit trying to control it. Like you don't know what's best for you always. Surprise. I don't know. People always think they know what's best for their life. You don't.
I've resigned to the fact that I have no clue what's going on ever at any point. Just doing the best with what I've got.
And really just living in that mindset is living really small. Right? Because if I truly believe that God like knows all, is above all, like he can do way more than I can do. So I don't know, just being willing to not know what's best for you and to just keep taking the next step. Like, I think we just feel like we always have to have it all figured out. And that's not true either. Just take one step at a time and, things will fall into place. Yeah.
I love that. That's wonderful advice. Let it be, guys. Just let it be. Well, Emily, thank you so much for joining me today. I can't wait for all of our listeners to hear this episode. I think it's very powerful and very impactful. And I hope that we get to meet up and go on a hike soon. We should do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, okay, sounds great. Thanks, Emily.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you guys so much for listening. I appreciate you. If you want to keep up with all the happenings, be sure to like, follow, subscribe, you know the drill. You can also find me on Instagram at samadams7 and find out more about the biz at sunfloweragencies.com. That's SNFLWR agencies.com. Thanks guys.